gathered together from the far reaches of the internet are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman. The Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
The Thrilling Adventures of Superman,
Golden Age Superman,
The Superman Fan Podcast,
Superman in the Bronze Age,
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
I've got a few things to say about Superman.
The Superman Vidcast,
the world's best podcast,
and
Radio Kale from SupermanHomepage.com,
as well as the audio dramas Superman, Last Son of Krypton, and Supergirl, Last Daughter of Krypton from Pendant Audio Productions. Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
J. David Weider,
Jeffrey Taylor,
Michael Bailey,
Scott Gardner,
Cayman Stoll,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Yunus, and co-host Scotty V.
at SupermanPodcastNetwork.com.
This is the Superman Fan Podcast. I'm your host, Billy Hogan. Put on your indestructible cape and join me as together we'll crash through the time barrier and fly into the past to explore the Silver Age adventures of Superman. This is episode number 218, part 2. The MegaCon DC panels for Wednesday, February 22nd, 2012. I started posting the panels that I attended a little bit out of order, beginning with the Working Faithfully panel. As I said earlier this morning, around 1 o'clock this morning, I had gotten permission from Sergio Cariello and Billy Tucci and Chuck Dixon to post that panel on, as an episode. And so that was the last panel I went to on Friday. And so when I happened to see Billy and Chuck, they asked about it. And so I said, you know, as soon as I do the DC panel reports for the Superman homepage, I would get to it. So I wanted to make sure I got it out for them. And so now the rest of the episodes will be in order of the panels that I went to. Now, the two DC panels, the first happened on Friday afternoon, a little after 2:30. That was the DC All Access panel. And the second panel, the second DC panel, took place on Saturday morning from about 10:30 to about 20 after 11. And so I'm going to just combine those two panels in one episode with a break in between. Now, I won't be posting any audio for those panels for obvious reasons. This is, you know, a panel with the co-publisher Dan DiDio and executive editor Eddie Braganza. And so when you're dealing with a, you know, panel with a major publishing company, that's a little bit more complicated as far as getting permission to post audio than if you're talking to an individual comic book creator. So to avoid, any problems in the near future, I took the audio that, I had recorded and wrote up reports for the Superman homepage with him, and I'll be sharing them in two segments on this particular episode. And then at the end of this episode, I will also give you a list of the other MegaCon panels that I will post. Hopefully, I'll get them all done this afternoon, because I hope to spend all of tomorrow working on the Slipstream comic book and finishing part two, which will premiere this coming Saturday on February 25th. And so now that it's not at the end of the day like it was yesterday when I was putting together the Working Faithfully episode, I'll be posting, I'll be going back to posting some promos for some comic book podcasts, and then we'll begin looking at the DC All Access panel from Friday.
Look, up in the sky!
It's a bird!
It's a plane! No, it's SupermanHomepage.com, the number one Superman fan site in the world! SupermanHomepage.com, covering the world of Superman from the 1930s to today. News, reviews, rumors, and reports. SupermanHomepage.com for all your Superman comics, TV shows, movies, cartoons, radio shows, and more. Everything you ever wanted to know about the Man of Steel and more. SupermanHomepage.com.
On May 30th, 2011, DC Comics announced the historic renumbering of all their superhero titles, and the internet broke in half.
No. No. It's not true. That's impossible.
Critics and naysayers abounded. Confusion reigned across fandom.
What'll I do? What'll I do? What an unusual view!
Not to mention the first reactions to the Supergirl costume.
I hated her so much. Flames on the side of my face, breathing, breath, heaving breaths, heaving.
But then the books actually hit. And opinions...
He likes it! Hey, Mikey!
Opinions began to change. The New 52 Adventures of Superman is a monthly podcast where John Wilson...
J. David Weider.
And...
Michael Kaiser.
Take a look at each of the adventures of Superman and his family of characters in Action Comics.
You know the deal, Metropolis. Treat people right, or expect a visit from me.
The Superman who appeared 6 months ago could hurdle skyscrapers and toss trucks around. Now it's faster, now it's stronger. How soon before it can't be stopped?
Superboy.
If resolving a situation for him is going to get me out from under these people once and for all, that's a small price to pay for freedom.
Release the Superboy.
Supergirl.
Okay. Giant metal creatures. Falling from the sky. Speaking in clicks and beeps. Father would love this dream.
And Superman.
You could do so much good. We could do so much good.
I am doing good, Lois.
Clark's such a loner. Never really lets anyone get close to him.
The New 52 Adventures of Superman. Available the first of every month on iTunes and at new52superman.libsyn.com.
As I mentioned in the preview episode for MegaCon, I'd volunteer to cover the DC panels for the Superman homepage, and I want to thank Steve Yunus for giving me the opportunity, and I want to thank him also for talking with me on the Radio KAL live episode from Monday evening. The DC All Access panel was the very first panel I attended at this year's MegaCon. The panel was moderated by DC co-publisher Dan DiDio, and this was the first convention of the year for DC, and it was their first since the New York Comic Con in October of last year. Which that one took place about 6 weeks after the release of the New 52 titles. And so with MegaCon, DC's readers have had a little bit more experience, gotten a little more familiar with the New 52. And he revealed that the planning for the New 52 began around the time of last year's MegaCon in the first part of the year. And he complimented all of the creative teams for keeping the details secret until the official announcement could be made, and he chalked it up to their dedication, you know, to the and enthusiasm for the project. Although I'm sure non-disclosure agreements helped also, not to be sarcastic about it, but you know, that's when working for a large comic book company or any entertainment company, that's part of the deal, you know, non-disclosure agreements. Then Dan introduced executive editor Eddie Berganza, and he came into the panel, literally just getting off the plane from the Orlando International Airport, and he even brought his luggage. And Eddie happened to mention that he had brought the overviews of the next 6 months for DC's titles. And Dan shared a few more details about the New 52. He said that DC conducted surveys to gauge fan reaction to the relaunch. And then he asked the audience what some of their concerns about the reboot were. Comments went from losing an established continuity to the possibility of just another confusing partial reboot as DC has had in the past. And Dan said that the DC staff shared the same concerns when the New 52 was being discussed, since they're comic fans also. Couple of things that Dan said that DC wanted to accomplish with the relaunch was to he wanted to make a pact with the fans, not take anything for granted, and make sure the titles were published on time. Another concern from the audience at the panel was the role that the Justice Society would play in the New 52, and which Dan said would be revealed in the coming months. There's the Earth 2 title, and the World's Finest, which will feature Power Girl and the Huntress, who will be refugees from Earth 2 stuck on the New 52 Earth, or Earth 1, if I'm not sure of what our Earth is going to be called, or the New 52 Superman Batman's Earth. Another fan liked the relaunch was like the creative teams, including the Watchmen prequels, which that certainly has garnered a lot of controversy. Another audience member liked Animal Man and Swamp Thing. And Dan mentioned that Vertigo had some good plans in store, but in the early part of the New 52, the company's emphasis was going to be on creating some variety in a new DC universe. And someone else said that they liked the attention given to titles like Hawkman and Suicide Squad instead of just DC's most popular heroes like Batman and Green Lantern. Although, you know, while Suicide Squad seems, you know, popular, I'm not sure what the sales numbers are. You know, Hawkman, you know, I've heard some bad reviews of. Then Dan and Eddie then got into some more of the background of New 52. They said it was a constantly changing, evolving process because the 52 titles and the creative teams that they began with weren't the ones, all the same ones that finally were published. DC had a huge bulletin board, and they had 52 titles, and then the names of a bunch of creators they helped to work with, and they mixed and matched them, the titles with creators, and then eventually they came up with the final lineup that we're now familiar with. The main goal of the New 52 was to gain new readership, and you know, so far it seems to be working, although you know, sales has dipped a little bit, which you know seems to happen when new titles are published. They said one of the important aspects of the relaunch was to give new readers an easy jumping on point. And it was a bit of a balancing act with current readers or previous readers who were used to the older continuity, who might feel that DC was throwing away that continuity, balancing that with trying to get new fans to jump on board. So that was a very delicate balancing act, and obviously they're still working on that. Then Dan introduced writer Tony Barrard and artist Kenneth Rocafort. And while Tony was there as a professional, had his own table, Dan said Kenneth was there just as a fan. And then Didier opened up the floor to questions, and one fan complimented Kenneth's work on Red Hood and the Outlaws and asked if he could stay on the book, and he said he was really enjoying the book and looked forward to continuing on the title. A couple other characters that drew some interest from the audience were the New Gods and Ted Kord. Now, the New Gods will have a role in the New 52, but the panels were cryptic about Ted Kord. And so anytime someone asked about Ted Kord or Kord Industries, they were very cryptic and really held things close to the chest about Ted Kord, or even if he was even going to be in the New 52. There's another fan that liked the DC's Captain Marvel, of course now called Shazam, because Marvel owns the copyright to and trademark to Captain Marvel. Dan mentioned that his place in the New 52 would be established in a backup story coming up in the Justice League. And Eddie also added that the new history of the characters, you know, the 5 years later, you know, that gap will be filled in the pages of their various titles. Then Dan did an impromptu survey of the audience to see how many readers had sampled the New 52, beginning with asking how many had picked one or five titles with a show of hands. And then he went up in increments of 5 and 10, all the way up to how many picked up all 52 titles. And while Dan said he didn't expect, you know, readers to buy all 52 titles, he appreciated the fans that did. And there are a few people in the audience that said they were still buying all 52 titles. And Dan also reaffirmed that DC was keeping all but six titles at $2.99 because DC wanted to give readers the opportunity to be able to get as many titles as they could. And Eddie said that another goal was, with the relaunch, was to modernize their characters. Then a Superman reader voiced a concern about the number of past reboots for the Man of Steel, and the renumbering of DC's longest-running titles and the Before Watchmen miniseries. Dan said that the creators working on the new Watchmen, Before Watchmen series, they wanted to work on those characters that the books that they're on, and that Dan acknowledged the number of reboots in the past, and while Superman Earth One wasn't a relaunch, since it's the Earth One Superman is out in its own universe, he also said that the main reason for renumbering all of DC's titles was to show that the company was serious about modernizing its characters and moving them forward. He said only three titles had never been renumbered, Action, Batman, and Detective. And during those early meetings, Dan said he wanted to hold those three titles from being renumbered for that reason. But then one of the staffers pointed out that if those titles weren't renumbered, readers might get the idea that they would just, you know, they were leaving themselves a door open that they, if this doesn't work with the fans, they'll just, you know, go back to the old continuity. And so they decided to renumber all of them and show they were serious about sticking with this New 52. And he also referred to the recently renumbered Wonder Woman title and Geoff Johns' Superman Secret Origins. Those were done before DC decided to make their New 52. And then when the decision was made to relaunch the DC Universe, everyone at DC realized changes had to be made, and they had to move the character forward. There was another reader in the audience who was a fan of War Comics, and they were glad to see War Comics being reintroduced into DC, and was glad to see new Vertigo titles as well. And Dan was asked about future DC animated movies, and DiDio said that he finds out about the new releases the same time the public does. While he had a background in animation, his focus at DC is on the publishing side, and he isn't involved in the animation side of DC Entertainment, you know, since those are two different divisions of the company. There was another question about Static Shock and Cassandra Cain. There was a fan of both characters. He didn't like the lack of use of both characters in the past year, as he had mentioned talking to Dan at last year's convention. And he brought up the conflict between Scott McDaniel and John Rossum on the recently canceled Static Shock series. And while Dan wouldn't comment on, you know, what's been said over the internet between the two creators, he said that Static Shock and the other Milestone Universe were very rich characters, and they'd continue to be a part of the DC Universe, and Static would find a new home. And Eddie said that Static Shock would be a part of the Teen Titans, and as for Cassandra, she would appear in an upcoming title, but they did not give any details. And going back to the point about the DC animated movies, Dan was asked about how much input DC Comics has with the movies made of the characters. The person who asked the question said that there didn't seem to be much input by DC into the recent Green Lantern movie. And the questioners seemed to infer that they didn't think that the producers really did the original material justice. Dan reiterated that the comic side of the company was separate from the movie side, and their input with various properties varies with the different producers working on each movie. He said, with The Dark Knight Rises, which is coming up late spring, he felt that they're in good hands. There was another fan enjoyed the early crossovers in the 52, like The Rot and The Court of Owls, and wondered if there's going to be any future crossovers. Tony Bedard said that there would be a crossover between Blue Beetle and the New Guardians, and he gave a couple of details. The Reach, who are an alien race who invented the Blue Beetle armor, would invade the homeworld of the Blue Lanterns, and so that would result in a team-up with the current Beetle, Jaime Reyes and Kyle Rayner. And another DC fan asked about more combo packs, and Dan said that while they're looking to introduce more, they're being very cautious about it because they don't want to overload the readers with it, and they want to see how the current combo packs do over the long run first. Another reader asked if DC regretted establishing the fact that the Justice League formed 5 years ago rather than making it more ambiguous. And Eddie said that there's a lot of story to be told in that 5-year gap, and DC does have plans to eventually fill that gap in the history. And Tony Bedard chimed in on the question, said that setting the relaunch for the New 52 at 5 years later made it something that he enjoyed working with because it gave the heroes, that 5-year gap, gave the heroes some experience, but they weren't firmly established in their roles yet. They still, had the potential, they weren't totally experienced. They had the potential to make mistakes, and they had room to grow, and for seeing things and situations for the first time, and that really excited him as a writer. Another person in the audience thought that the $5.99 combo packs seemed expensive, especially compared with Marvel's combo packs, where they're keeping those at the normal cover price of the other editions of those titles. And Dan simply said that DC was revisiting their digital strategy you know, everything's still in an evolving process, and with the ultimate goal of keeping the core line of titles as strong as possible. Then Dan went into some details about the upcoming Free Comic Book Day edition, which would not be a reprint of any or a teaser reprint of some upcoming title, but would be original content. It would be edited by Eddie Braganza, who said that Jeff Johns and Jim Lee would be the writer and artist respectively on it. And the DC book for Free Comic Book Day would feature the purple hooded character that appeared in all 52 number one issues, which later in the panel, I believe the name given to the character was Pandora. And Kenneth Rocafort would do a feature about the DC Universe, and Gene Ha would be involved in another story in that issue as well. And kind of plugging the title, Eddie said that he couldn't believe that DC would be giving the book away because it was going to be so good. A fan of the title Batman Widening Gear wanted to know when the next issue would be published, referring to the cliffhanger ending from the last issue that was published. And Dan didn't really give any timeline on its release. He said, obviously, Kevin Smith is pretty busy with his current TV show, Comic Book Men. Then another Superman fan asked why the Man of Steel was wearing armor, and Eddie explained that it was Kryptonian armor, and the details of Superman's uniform would be revealed in the upcoming Brainiac story. And the same fan had a follow-up question about the archive editions of DC's Golden Age material, and he gave an example in a Wonder Woman archive where there was a scene from back in the 40s, which had one of the racial stereotypes typical of the era in the story, but when the same story was reprinted in the Wonder Woman Chronicles, then that character had been redrawn. And while the person asking the question didn't like the racial caricature, he was looking at it from a historical perspective of why it was changed and not left to reflect the time, and note the depiction of minorities in a very stereotypical way that wouldn't be accepted today, you know, in a introduction or foreword. And Dan said he was unfamiliar with the editions in question, but he just said that DC is sensitive to the concerns of its readers. The next question was about Wally West and why DC went with Barry instead of Wally as the version of the hero. And Dan said that DC decided to go with the iconic versions of the heritage characters like Flash and Green Lantern because Barry is the most iconic version of the character. Since he was the first to receive the speed powers, and Wally was a derivative of Barry. And when the new 52 was being developed, the staff wanted to keep the age of the characters down, and having Wally at the beginning of the relaunch would have him too close in age to Barry. And so, also, with Wally, there's the question of what to do with his wife, his twins, and or make him a teenager, but they also decided to go with Bart in that role. Of course, that doesn't answer the question why DC went with Bart instead of Wally. But Dan said that Wally got pushed aside because of those choices, and he said the same thing happened with Donna Troy, because Diana is the iconic Wonder Woman, and Donna Troy is derivative of her. And so DC wanted to make Flash and Wonder Woman as iconic as possible. Someone else followed up on the question of the development of Pandora, who was the purple-hooded character in all of DC's 52 number one issues. And Eddie said that when they were looking at the new 52, they thought there might be a cool to have something tie all 52 titles together, And Bob Harris got involved in the process of kind of developing it. And then Geoff Johns developed the mythology of the character further, leading to, you know, things to come. And in the near future, we'll learn how Pandora got the name, the character's mythology and background. DC's looking to tell big epic stories, and the staff want to give all their titles that feeling. And then Dan got into a little bit more about the process. He said during this early period when the New 52 was being given birth, the more people got involved, more ideas were thrown in the pot and developed. And it was a constant process of evolution for the creative teams, because with, you know, 52 books, they each are going to be, their plots are going to have their own pace. And sometimes an idea in one area of the New 52 would mean another area would need to be altered. And so for a while, it was an incredibly frustrating time, but the creative staff had put their egos aside because they were so enthused about, you know, the project they were working on, and they worked together to make sure that all 52 books were as strong as they could be. And then Dan said that when the New 52 reached issue 6, it was a turning point. They were all coming into their own. They were all on the same path. As creators, were more aware of what everyone else was doing. He credited Tony's writing and Kenneth's designs, and as well as the long hours that Eddie and Bob put in to make sure the New 52 worked. And Dan acknowledged that while some things didn't work, like there were several titles that were canceled, he said there were hundreds of things which did work, and that's what excited him. And he talked a bit more about DC's fan base. He said that comic book fans were the most fickle, yet loyal fans. They were very fickle in how they chose you, but once they did, they're loyal for life. And he reiterated that DC won't take that for granted, because reading comic books is a very expensive hobby. And he said when creative teams do change on books, it's make the books better and make sure they're published on time. And the goal is to keep the readers enthused and coming back next month. And another fan enjoyed the backup stories as well as the DC Presents and would like to see more. Dan said that they didn't want to overextend the backup features and raise the prices on too many books. He said that the balance of with the cover prices was good, and he didn't want to alter them too drastically. And he considered DC Presents a destination book for DC because it gives a spotlight to characters that don't appear anywhere else. And another member of the audience expressed his dissatisfaction with Power Girl's new costume, not just because the part of the term boob window is gone, but that it now has the logo on the front, which he felt put her design kind of in Superman's shadow. And Dan said that there's an upcoming story point that would address that. And a follow-up question was if Darkseid would be a multiversal villain in the New 52. I guess referring to, since we're going to have, you know, the Earth 1, the New 52 Earth, and an Earth 2. And Dan simply said yes. A reader of the DC Universe Online was having trouble matching up with the comic book continuity. Dan explained that the DCU Online comic book has nothing to do with the regular comic book continuity, but it's in line with the video game. And there was another question about any new event titles. And Eddie said that any events would happen in their respective titles. For instance, the Batman annuals would involve the Court of Owls. And then Tony also talked about the New Guardians and Green Lantern Corps would have a crossover around issue 12 and 13. And the panel also dismissed a rumor that was touched on by someone in the audience about a team-up of all the Robins. And another question was about if there would be a New 52 version of a Blue Beetle and Booster Gold team-up. And Tony's admitted he was a little bit torn about it since he was a fan of both characters from their heyday. But he wanted to keep Jaime in the spotlight for now. Tony mentioned that Ted Kord is probably out there somewhere, but who knows where. And Dan said that all he knows is that there's a Kord Industries somewhere. And a Legion fan requested that DC keep Paul Levitz writing the Legion of Superheroes, and Dan said that Levitz would continue on the title. And in response to someone else's question if there would be more Outlaws for Jason Todd and any new Rebels characters, Kenneth simply said yes, but there were no other details brought up. When someone asked if there was a character that DC readers should look out for in 2012, Dan and Eddie both agreed that there was about six to look out for, but they didn't mention who they were, so to kind of drum up interest. And the final question of the panel was if Grant Morrison's title, Multiversity, would eventually be published, to which Dan said yes, and that was the end of the panel. I thought it was an interesting panel. My favorite part was this learning some of the background of the development of the New 52. I'm not reading a lot of it. So far, I'm only getting five titles, the two Superman books, the two Legion books, and All-Star Western, and that was the only ones that I sampled. This is the third time that I've been at a DC panel. I think I went to both of them last year, and my first experience was when I went to MegaCon with Jeffrey back in 2010, and we went to a DC panel with Dan DiDio, and it was just him in the audience, and I was very impressed. I think I said back then, but if not, I'll just say that Dan reminds me of what people have said about former President Bill Clinton, that when you meet him in person, he does have a charisma. When you meet him, he knows how to draw the audience in, and Dan certainly fits that bill. This isn't a criticism, it's just an observation. He knows how to give you an answer, and while he may not answer your question, you feel like you have an answer until, you know, you go back and think about, you know, the question and answer. But he really knows how to engage the audience, kind of move the conversation along with the panel audience in the direction he wants it to go. So if you haven't been to a panel with Dan DiDio, at least go once, no matter what your feelings are about him. Just to kind of get a feel for the man in person. And after a couple more promos for some comic book podcasts, we'll get to the Saturday DC panel, which was the New 52 panel.
I couldn't believe he was really dead. I didn't know what I could say to you.
Yes, child, we know, we know.
I was there. I watched him fight that thing. I watched him die. I didn't do anything but watch him die.
Lois, Lois, now listen. It's not your fault. You did all you could. Everyone did everything they could. Now you've got to get on with your life. We all have.
The battle is over. A hero has fallen.
Miss Lane, I monitored Superman when I arrived. I cannot pick up any brain activity at all.
As the city mourns, a family comes to grips with the loss of their son.
I keep coming back here to the North Pasture, to where he first came into our lives, to say goodbye.
His fellow heroes feel regret.
Oh, if only I could have helped him, Lex.
While his enemies see opportunity.
Well, now I'm back on top. And you can't do one blessed thing about it. You're dead. You're nothing. Metropolis is mine again. And are an empty, lifeless, withering husk.
Worst of all, his true love has to learn to live without him.
Goodbye, Kal-El.
This January, from Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by SupermanHomepage.com and SupermanPodcastNetwork.com begin their coverage of the second part of the Death and Return of Superman trilogy. Every Thursday, you are invited to join hosts Michael Bailey and Jeffrey Taylor as they explore how his friends, loved ones, bitter enemies, and fellow heroes deal with the loss of the Man of Steel. A City in Mourning. A World Without Superman. A Funeral for a Friend.
Hey everybody, my name is Michael Bailey. And this is the trailer with a truly epic ending to my new show about Batman, appropriately titled Bailey's Batman Podcast. Bailey's Batman Podcast is a weekly program that looks at a month in the life of the Dark Knight Detective, starting with the books bearing a March 1983 cover date, which is where my solid run of the character's comics begins, and moving forward until, well, at least until the books that came out in 2005, because that's where the solid run ends. Each week, I will give you a full synopsis and review of every major ongoing Batman title, with brief stops along the way to look at the important specials, miniseries, one-shots, and Elseworld stories, just to keep things interesting. I'll also be telling you what other books Batman appeared in that month, as well as what was going on elsewhere in the DCU. It is going to be all Batman, all the time, as I look at over 20 years of the character's history. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the epic ending to this trailer. You ready? The first appearance of Jason Todd. Death in the Family. Nightfall. Epic. No Man's Land. Do you have chills yet? All of that and more will be covered on Bailey's Batman Podcast every Tuesday at BaileysBatmanPodcast.com.
Rocketed as a baby from the exploding planet Krypton, Kal-El grew to manhood on Earth, whose yellow sun and lighter gravity gave him fantastic superpowers. In the city of Metropolis, he poses as TV newsman Clark Kent, but battles evil all over Earth and beyond as Superman. Superman in the Bronze Age is a weekly podcast following the adventures of Superman from 1970 to the Byrne reboot in 1986. Follow along at supermaninthebronzeage.blogspot.com.
The DC New 52 panel took place Saturday morning at about 10:30. Again, Dan DiDio, the co-publisher of DC Comics, was the moderator. Then he introduced the panelists, beginning with executive editor Eddie Braganza. Then next, he introduced Jimmy Palmiotti, co-writer of All-Star Western and The Ray. Greg Capullo, who is the Batman artist, working on the Court of Owls storyline, and Tony Bedard, writer of the New Guardians, and finally, Dan Jurgens, writer and artist on Green Arrow and soon Superman. Dan began by asking how many people enjoyed the New 52, and he was answered with applause. Then, just as he did with the Friday panel, he asked how many readers bought all 52 number one titles, and then he asked them to stand, and they got a round of applause, and Dan thanked all the readers for jumping on board. Then he complimented all the writers and artists involved with the 52 titles, and while he said a few didn't succeed, he complimented all the creators involved for their energy and commitment, And because they all knew they were working on an exciting new and huge project. And he thanked the readers for picking up even just one title and making the New 52 a success. Then he began the panel by asking different panelists questions. He started with Eddie Braganza. And Dan asked Eddie what the process was of creating New 52 and what the challenges were. And Eddie said that the first challenge was deciding what titles would be part of the New 52, and then picking the right creators, matching them with the right title from a large pool of talent. And they needed to decide which titles DC readers wanted to read. And then Dan asked Eddie about the decision to make the heroes younger and set up the 5 years later timeline. And Eddie said that the goal was to make the characters new and fresh and give them a modern attitude, as in the case of Superman. And DC wanted to make it easier to jump aboard without having to know a lot of back history. Then Dan moved on to Jimmy Palmiotti, who had co-written the popular Jonah Hex series, which had ended just before the New 52 began. And Jimmy said that, you know, Jonah didn't really change for the relaunch. The only difference was that with the New 52, Jonah Hex was put into the Gotham City of the 1880s. And Jimmy credited Dan DiDio for coming up with that idea. And then Jimmy and his co-writer Justin Gray had the opportunity to come up with some crazy ideas using that premise, and also work with the Batman team on the Court of Owls. The thing about the book All-Star Western is that they get to keep Jonah the same. They just put him in Gotham City and see what insanity occurs. And another thing Jimmy likes is the opportunity to feature more Western characters in the backup stories. While some will be some of the older DC Western characters, there will be some new characters. His goal is to get people who had never picked up a Western comic book before to make them interested enough to at least read one. Then Dan said that one of the other things DC wanted to do with the relaunch was to use books like All-Star Western and Demon Knights, which is set in the Middle Ages, and that's to show that the DC Universe has a long history and didn't just start 5 years ago with the Age of Superheroes, and also without using time travel as a plot device. Then Dan moved on to Greg Capullo, who said that his work on Batman was his very first work for DC Comics. Previously, he'd been a Marvel guy, and he'd never dreamed before that he would work for DC. Previous opportunities to work with DC had never come to fruition, but as a boy, he had drawn Batman, so it was in his blood. When he had to make that choice between jumping to DC or remaining at Marvel, Greg said it was a pretty tough decision, but then the little kid in him said, "Yeah, but it's Batman." And then Greg said now he's having the time of his life, although his first issue was tough because, you know, he wasn't just he's working on Batman, but he's working on a new Batman number one. And then Greg explained that when he goes to a new title, it's a learning process because he wants to get familiar with the character's environment. And he said something that kind of stuck with me as someone who likes to learn about creating a comic book story, since I'm working on Slipstream. Greg said the story tells him how it wants to be illustrated. And he said that he began to get comfortable with Batman around issue 3, and that he's having a lot of fun working with writer Scott Snyder. And then Dan went to Tony Bedard next, who had worked with the Green Lantern characters for a number of years. But for him, it was a challenge because going to the New Guardians, they would have the various colored lanterns would be represented. And he wasn't able to use the most familiar Green Lanterns, but that meant got to have a lot of fun establishing the histories of these lesser-known Lantern Corps. Then Dan moved on to the Jaime Reyes Blue Beetle, and Tony said that intimidated him because he enjoyed the previous Blue Beetle series so much. He wanted to do something new and fresh with the character without throwing away what the previous creative team had done with Reyes and his version of the Blue Beetle. And he said he used the first six issues to establish Jaime in the New 52, and coming up, the character would be moving to New York and interacting with more of the DC heroes. Then next was Dan Jurgens, and he talked about his work on Justice League International. And Dan DiDio asked Jurgens how he came up with the cast for the title. He said the creative team began by mixing and matching characters until they came up with a team they felt would work, and the intention from the beginning was to have the lineup fluctuate at first. It was important to have characters also, which had different levels of experience, put them together, stir the pot, and let them take off from there. One major difference from Justice League International from the Justice League title would be that the international team would begin in the present, not 5 years ago, as in the case of the Justice League. They would all be working together for the first time, so that would create some interesting story possibilities. And then DiDio moved on to Jurgens' return to Superman. And Jurgens told a little story that really has stuck with me. He began by saying that when he would talk with George Perez, who began the new Superman number one and did the first six issues, and Jurgens is picking up with number seven, George told him, "I can't believe I need reference to draw Superman," I guess referring to his Kryptonian armored costume. Well, now that Dan Jurgens is working on Superman, he's saying, "I can't believe I need reference to draw Superman." As I mentioned earlier, Jurgens announced that issue 7 would be his first on the title, and Keith Giffen will be on board as co-writer, and Jesus Moreno is inker, who Jurgens said was doing a knockout job on the art. And what they want to do with Superman is to tell some wide-open Superman stories that fit the character while doing some interesting things for Clark and Jimmy. As for what's in store for both pals, Jurgens only gave one word, and that was bedbugs. And DiDio asked Jurgens about how his approach to Superman would be different this time around. He said, first of all, there's no spit curl. Of course, there's the armor. And it was also important to him to create a different visual language for the character. You know, the Man of Steel is still muscular, but he's a little slimmer and sleeker. His face is a little bit thinner since he's younger. And DiDio picked up on the last point, emphasizing that it was the goal to make the characters younger. And this was a comment that came from the previous panel. Give them some experience, but not so much that they're doing things by the numbers, as DiDio said. And give the heroes some room to grow and expand from there. Then he turned the panel over to questions from the audience. And the first question, again, was about Power Girl's costume. And Eddie simply said that the costume change would be a story point in upcoming Power Girl stories. The next question came from a longtime Superman fan who had been reading the character since he was six. He began by saying that he felt DC had taken away the magic from the Man of Steel. He said he felt that the company had walked away from everything that they had established with the character before. And he felt that the new Superman costume resembled the Superboy Prime costume a little too much rather than the traditional Superman uniform. And with the Superman 75th anniversary and the new movie coming up, he wondered what kind of Superman we were going to have. And DiDio said he appreciated the honesty, which is something he always welcomes at all the panels he does. He said that he didn't think the new continuity threw away the past, but he hoped DC was adding to it. He said, Didio said that what made Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman special to him is that they've had the ability to adapt and change over the years, while so many characters that were around when they were first published have fallen into obscurity. He said, added that it's not DC's intentions to do away with the traditional heroes. DC is going to keep the reprint editions coming, but he said the goal was to keep the characters alive for a new generation. And then the Superman fan, said that he had liked some of the previous reboots, like John Byrne's Man of Steel. And to him, the hardest part about the relaunch was the numbering, losing the chance to hit issue number 1,000. And Dan DiDio said he understood the reaction. He said, repeating a point from the previous day's panel, he said that the goal of the relaunch was move forward, not look back. And he repeated that the renumbering was to show that DC was serious about moving forward and not leaving the back door open, that they can just, go back to the old way. He said real goal was to reach 900 with the new 52. Then Dan Jurgens jumped in, and he told the story about when he was at two panels he was on back in 84, 85, just before John Byrne's Superman reboot was launched in 86 with the Man of Steel miniseries. And Jurgens said there was a storm of controversy about that move. Their concerns were pretty much the same as they are now. But Jurgens felt that things worked out okay for Superman because the post-Crisis of Infinite Earths Superman that began with the Man of Steel series has become the Superman for a generation. Jurgens said that he thought when Superman's done right, it's about the approach, the character sensibility, and finding what the core of the character is. And when those things are handled, whether it's 1950, 1986, or today, that's going to be a good Superman story. And DiDio added that that's why Jurgens is writing the title now, because he understood that, and that seemed to satisfy the Superman fan. And then there was an African-American member of the audience who asked about why Cyborg was chosen for the Justice League. And Eddie Braganza said it was a colorblind issue. He thought that Cyborg was a cool character and would make a great addition to the team, and that's why he graduated from the Titans to the League. The same fan also enjoyed Static Shock and Darkseid. And Dan talked about how, for him, the greater the villain, that makes the hero greater. DiDio added that he has a big problem with superheroes stopping bank robberies because there should be bigger threats for a superhero to face. And also on the same point, he hated seeing supervillains robbing banks using multi-million-dollar equipment because, as a lot of us have thought about, there's a lot more that could be done with that type of equipment than go rob the bank for probably less than what it took to build the giant robot to begin with. As far as racial diversity, Dan said it was a goal to have the DCU reflect the diversity found in real life and in DC's audience. And another question from the audience was about how reluctant DC is to kill characters after relaunch. And Eddie answered that DC would continue a policy that began with the Blackest Night series. That dead means dead. Death would no longer be a revolving door because death is too easy of a plot device. But the heroes would still be fighting for their lives. Eddie added that while Darkseid will be a very formidable villain, he said, wait until you see what Aquaman and Wonder Woman do to Darkseid. And DiDio added that he never thought that would ever be said about Aquaman, and that brought some laughter to the audience. And Dan repeated, with a new 52, dead means dead. Another fan picked up about the comment about Aquaman and said he enjoyed Aquaman and Animal Man and how the writers and artists worked together to develop the relaunch. And Greg Capullo talked about how with him, the writer had the lion's share of the responsibility. His goal was to bring a new look to Batman. Greg said it had been a while since he had read a Batman story. He'd really not been up to date on much of the current Batman stories at all. In fact, among the last Batman stories he read was Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns. And he had seen all the Batman films and TV shows, but he used his lack of familiarity with what had happened in recent Batman continuity as an advantage, because he had put all these past versions of Batman in a blender and came up with a character that to him would scare the bad guys. Capullo described his Batman as someone who's a slab of meat like a linebacker, but who was sharp as a blade. And he drew Batman's shape and his demeanor as something that would scare him if he came across Batman in real life. And then Jimmy, who I enjoy listening talk about the creative storytelling process, added that with the New 52, the process involved communication and collaboration, because creative teams consult with their editors, and there's a lot of collaboration with each other. And he said that's what he felt was what made the difference with the New 52. Another fan said that he was enjoying the New 52 digitally on his iPad, and the art was great. And DiDio said that one of the reasons that was the case was because Eddie Braganza had spent so much time putting the best creative teams together for the titles. And a female fan asked how the lineup of the New Titans was decided on and what roles Robins were. And Eddie repeated one of Dan Dio's sayings that he'd heard him say before, that being a Robin was an internship, and with each Robin had a rich history that each had a role to play, and that made it fun to work with each different Robin character. The same fan asked a follow-up question about Superboy and why it was decided to restart his continuity at the beginning. And Eddie kind of touched on the reason for the New 52, saying that instead of having to explain a backstory for the character, it seemed better to start fresh at the beginning and show it to the readers as it happened. And DiDio said that with so many changes to Superman, it made sense to start the other Superman family of characters from the beginning also. Then there was a question about how Nightwing fits in the relaunch. And DiDio said that Nightwing would be defined more by Batman than the Teen Titans. Eddie also added that there would be glimpses into the early relationship between Dick Grayson and Jason Todd. Where to begin the characters was decided by where to make the characters most accessible to the readers without having to give them a history lesson and get them caught up on the character and let the stories reveal the history as it's appropriate. Then DiDio repeated something that Jeff Johns had said, that everyone in the room has continuity, and that, as we get more familiar with people in real life, then we learn about their continuity. And it's the same with the characters in the New 52. The past will be revealed for these characters as the story allows. DiDio then talked with the writers. He asked Tony Bedard how he handled those concerns as a writer. And Tony said that while he felt that the big moments still existed for the characters like Blackest Night, it doesn't need to be rehashed. DiDio said that with past reboots, part of the problem with them was the confusion which arose from what was kept and what was set aside. He likened it to putting a square peg in a round hole. Doesn't really work. And so that's why the relaunch is looking forward and not looking back. And Jimmy Palmiotti gave an example with the Ray. His and Justin's approach was to acknowledge that there were other superhero versions of the Ray in the past, but this is a new version of the character. And with G.I. Combat, which he's also working on, I believe, that was the same approach with the Unknown Soldier. Along with co-writer Justin Gray, Jimmy looked at what was great about the character as he had been done in the past and how they could present it to a new audience. With the Unknown Soldier, they acknowledged there were past unknown soldiers, but this is a new one. Next, there was a question by a fan of the Wednesday Comics miniseries, and he asked if DC would be bringing the title back. And DiDio said that they're looking at it, but the editor on that was on Wednesday Comics, Mark Chiarello, is now busy editing the Before Watchmen miniseries, so a new version of the Wednesday Comics is going to have to wait. The next question was about the development of the Court of Owls. Greg said that he developed designs for the backstory for the centuries-long history of the Court of Owls, and that was a lot of fun. Another Batman fan said that he liked how twisted Greg and Scott were with some of the stories they were coming up with. He wondered if they had to kind of rein themselves in when working together. And Greg said that while Scott is a very mild-mannered guy, he's got a very wild and crazy streak. Greg said that he takes what Scott throws him and he runs with it. But, you know, they realize they're working with corporate-owned characters. So, you know, there's a line you don't cross, but there's still a lot they could do with them. Another question was, repeating from the previous day's panel, was if there would be a Blue Beetle and Booster Gold team-up. And there was, some echoing sentiment from the audience about that. Tony said that there weren't any plans right now, but while it might happen in the future, the focus right now is to establish both characters without bringing in the past continuity and find a happy medium. A fan followed the question about Dead is Dead by asking how many times a Suicide Squad would kill Resurrection Man, to which DiDio answered that with a group name of Suicide Squad, the Resurrection Man would make a great addition to the team. The next person in the audience asked how DC handled criticism, and Greg said, you know, it's human nature to resist change, but with the new 52, if readers keep an open mind, you know, they might find something that they like. And another comic book fan said that he had been a reader in the past, but he'd kind of gotten out of the hobby. But the DC relaunch made it less intimidating to begin reading DC Comics again, to which Greg said, mission accomplished. And then Jimmy asked the guy's girlfriend what she thought about it, and she loved it. The next question was, how far in advance did DC pull the trigger and go all in to the relaunch? Dan said that the whole process, you know, went smoothly, and the planning began at the beginning of last year. Jimmy added that he's known Dan DiDio a long time, and one of the first things that Dan said when he began working for DC that he told Jimmy was that he'd like to begin the whole line from the beginning again. And so I guess Dan DiDio finally got his wish. Another question was if Ralph and Sue Dibny would appear in a new DCU, and that question piqued my interest because I go back to the late 1960s reading Ralph and Sue's stories in the back of Detective Comics. DiDio said, you know, they don't know, and they're not going to announce anything like that ahead of time so that, you know, DC can keep their options open. The next question was about how the early issues of the New 52 seem to be very adult. There are a lot of crazy stuff in there that less appropriate for younger readers, but that some of the later issues seem to be kind of toned down a little bit and written for another audience, a younger audience, I should say. Dan said that the goal was to make the books for a wider audience instead of making all 52 titles the same. And in response to a question by the Justice League, Dan Jurgen said in future issues, the backgrounds of some of the characters of the JLI members would be revealed. And DiDio said that the first question he ever asked at a convention was to Dan Jurgens about Booster Gold. And that kind of surprised Jurgens a bit. And Jurgens asked DiDio, what did he ask? What were you thinking? To which DiDio said, yeah, a little bit. The final question came from Rorschach. asking about the trade paperbacks, how they'd be affected by the new 52. DiDio said that they would be released beginning in May. The collected editions of the individual titles won't be published in any set patterns because the DC's goal with the new 52 is to collect as much of a complete story as possible. So some titles, collected editions of some titles might have collect six issues, others might collect eight issues, and others might include more issues, depending on the length of the individual storylines. And that's how the panel ended. And again, it was a very interesting panel for DC for both days. There really wasn't any new, except in little details here and there, there were no great big announcements. It seemed like with MegaCon, DC was wanting to kind of fill in the fan base about the background of the new 52 and kind of stir up, you know, keep the excitement up for DC fans for the new 52. One point I wanted to share, not to say that, you know, DC's wrong about, you know, giving readers a good jumping on point, and because, you know, comic book readers are all different. With me, my first, when I look at a comic book I've never read before, my thing is it a good story? You know, I've read stories where, read an issue where I've come in the middle of a story, and it's a good story. There's a lot I don't know, but if the story is good enough, then I'll want to go back and find the previous issues of that story to as part of the fun of getting into a certain title or a certain character. And I'll give you an example. My first issue of Planetary, which is one of my all-time favorite comic book series, was issue 19. That's the one where there's a probe which kind of reminded me of the thing from Star Trek IV or the Doomsday Machine episode of the classic Star Trek series. And it had what I call the 2001 A Space Odyssey cover, because that cover seemed to me at least, was an homage to that cover. And it was like right in the middle of a story. In that particular, it was there was things talked about from past issues, but it was a great story, pulled me in, fantastic art by John Cassaday, and it ended on a cliffhanger, and that particular story finished up in issue 20. And later on, I got into Planetary began publishing again, because it's had a very sporadic publishing history, like 27, 28 issues in a decade, because of the various deadlines and health issues and whatnot between the creative team. But when the next new issue came out, I jumped on board, and eventually between back issues and the trade paperbacks, then I got filled in on Planetary. So I'm not criticizing DC. I'm just saying, you know, my comic book reading habit might be a little bit different. So, you know, I'm not kind of intimidated by continuity, you know, back history. To me, that's part of the fun. I like all the little details. But, you know, everyone's different. Like the one person in the second panel said, he had kind of fallen away from the hobby. And before the new 52, he was kind of hesitant about jumping in. He was intimidated by all that backstory and back history. So, to each his own. So, I'm not criticizing that. I just wanted to share what my kind of comic book reading habit is like. I hope you enjoyed this report on the DC panels. I didn't give it, other than here at the very end, that many editorial comments about it. I just want to present what was said, kind of sum it up as best that I could and as accurately as I could. leave it for you and let you make your own conclusions about it. And I look forward to reading your emails about this, and I'll, unless you say otherwise, I'll read them on the air in a future episode of the Superman Fan Podcast. Now, future episodes that I hope to put up tonight, after this panel, I will put up a the audio for a panel I went called Acting for Artists, Bringing Better Performances to Your Cartoons, Comics, and Character Illustrations. Because for me, doing the art on the Slipstream comic book, I like some of the panels about the how-to panels. So I thought, yeah, why not check it out? Then that was the next panel I went to on Friday after the All Access panel. Then the third panel I went to was the Working Faithfully panel, which was I put as part one of my MegaCon coverage. And then after that, I went to an Art Attack panel, which had Darwin Cook, who was on there? Greg Capullo was on there, Amanda Connor, Dennis Calero, Paul Peltier, talking about what makes a page of comic book art sing. Either the Working Faithfully panel ended a little late, or the Art Attack panel started early because I kind of got in the middle of it. I didn't get a chance to ask the permission of the panelists, so I'm not going to record any audio. If I have time, I'll go through, and like I did with these DC panels, and sum up what was said. But the next panel that I will record, or that I will post, will be the Titans Forever panel with original Titans artist Nick Hardy, George Perez, and Dan Jurgens. After that, Titans Forever, that was the second panel I went to after the New 52 panel, which I just finished discussing. After that, I went to part two of a three-day series that Comfort Love and Adam Weathers, husband and wife comic book team, did on creating comic books. And part two, which was the only one I was able to go to, was creating believable and memorable characters in science fiction and that was the next one. This one was creating believable and memorable characters in science fiction and fantasy. It's more geared towards prose and rather than the comic books, but again, I'm a process junkie, and I thought it would be useful information that I could bring into doing comic book characterization. Then was the Comfort Love and Adam Weathers panel, Creating Your Comic or Manga Part 2, Drawing Through Storytelling. Then, on Sunday, was the Ins and Outs of Indie Publishing. Again, that was geared more towards prose, but I thought it would be some good information, especially with doing independent comic books, because I figured a lot of what would be touched on in this panel could be incorporated and be helpful with independent comic book publishing. Another panel that I won't be providing any audio for, and if I can have the time, I'll do an audio report on. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of my mouth, getting ahead of my words. Was a Stan Lee panel. He did two or three, and I decided, you know, Stan Lee is in his late 80s. He's not going to be around much longer, so if I'm going to make a Stan Lee panel, I better go to one. So I went to the one Sunday afternoon, Sunday morning, about 11:30, right before lunch, and it was a blast. There wasn't a lot said or touched on I hadn't heard before, but just to see Stan Lee in person, it was moderated by Jimmy Palmiotti, who does a great Stan Lee imitation, I might add. And finally, the final panel I covered, and I will provide an audio for this panel, was Nick Hardy, the artist at war. which was moderated by Renee Witterstater, former Superman assistant editor, as well as editor on She-Hulk, who happened to bring back John Byrne to that particular series, which he had began and then left, and she brought him back. But her Eva Inc. publishing company published this book using which was about, and it had pictures of Nick's World War II art when he was in the Army over in Europe. And I have to say, I did not read much Nick Hardy comics that I'm aware of. I probably saw, you know, a lot of covers from the when I was in the 60s, but I was glad to meet him in person. He's got a great sense of humor. Well, after that, I will do a wrap-up episode. I'll get more into my personal kind of history at the, not history, but it's kind of what happened, what I saw, what I did at MegaCon this year, and as well as what I bought and some of the people I talked to. But that's coming up, and so I will sign off here and get busy posting some of these MegaCon panels for your enjoyment. And by the way, I will wait until next week to get back up on the Silver Age comic book stories, beginning with Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, number 21, I believe is the next issue.
Hey everybody, my name is Andrew Pinkham, and you know, recently I've noticed a growing trend in Superman podcasts across the entire podcasting network. They're covering all aspects of his character, from his Golden Age stories all the way to what's being covered in Monarch Comics today. However, I've noticed there aren't any podcasts that look at the character of Supergirl, Superman's cousin, in any form or fashion that's not an audio drama. And I really think there should be a podcast dedicated to her and her character. So therefore, I created Krypton's Last Daughter, a Supergirl podcast. Krypton's Last Daughter is a monthly program looking at the character of Supergirl from three different eras for a character, from her first appearance in Action Comics number 252 to her current reboot that's ongoing in the New 52 Supergirl title. Join me monthly at supergirlpodcast.wordpress.com.
In a world where planets die,
I have come to the conclusion Krypton is doomed.
Did I hear him right?
Where good and evil fight a never-ending battle.
But millions of people will die.
Billions! Once again, the press underestimates me.
One man will become a hero.
Every world needs its heroes, Clark. They inspire us to be better than we are. Protect us from the darkness that's just around the corner.
One man will rise to the challenge.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird!
It's a plane!
One man will wear spandex.
Well, one thing's for sure, nobody's gonna be looking at your face.
Mom?
Well, they don't call them tights for nothing.
Presenting The Thrilling Adventures of Superman, a podcast looking at the Man of Steel's history via his earliest adventures in comics, radio, and film. Featuring reviews, commentary, creator spotlights, and more. Join the adventure at GreatKrypton.com.
Lanterns, I've called you here to this unprecedented gathering because we face an unprecedented danger. An enemy we don't yet fully understand. It was for this moment that we were created. But I don't need to tell you your duty. I don't need to tell you who we are.
Father!
chosen by the mystic guardians of the universe.
Recruited from across the galaxy for their bravery and courage.
The best and brightest join to fulfill a solemn oath.
In brightest day.
In blackest night.
No evil shall escape my sight.
Let those who worship evil's might
beware my power.
Green Lantern's light.
Green Lantern's Light, a monthly podcast covering the adventures of Hal Jordan, John Stewart, Guy Gardner, and the entire Green Lantern Corps from 1984 through today.
Say the oath. Join the Corps.
Green Lantern's Light. Available monthly at greenlanternslight.com.
You are cordially invited to attend a podcast that observes the unfolding events of history. Come with me and observe the birth and growth of a legend. From the pages of a 10-cent pulp comic book to the newspapers, radio program adventures, theatrical films, and more. Witness the dawn of the superhero. Golden Age Superman. Available on iTunes and at goldenagesuperman.libsyn.com. Every legend has a beginning.
This concludes another episode of the Superman Fan Podcast. The home website is thesupermanfanpodcast.blogspot.com. Episodes are also available on iTunes and most other podcast aggregators, as well as supermanfanpodcast.wordpress.com and the Internet Archive at archive.org. Your emails are always welcome at supermanfanpodcast@gmail.com, and I look forward to reading them. The Superman Fan Podcast is a proud member of the following: the League of Comic Book Podcasters at comicbooknoise.com/league, the Comics Podcast Network at comicspodcasts.com, the Superman Web Ring of Websites, and the Superman Podcast Network, which you can find at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com, where you can find podcasts covering every era of the Man of Steel from the Golden Age to today. The theme music for this podcast is titled Plans in Motion, composed by Kevin MacLeod, part of the royalty-free music library at incompetech.com. You can join the Superman Fan Podcast group and page on Facebook, and follow the podcast on Twitter at Superman Podcast. Superman and all related characters and images are trademark and copyright of DC Comics. Any artwork displayed with the show notes is for entertainment purposes only. I make no claim of ownership to the images shown, nor do I earn any money or profit from this podcast. Finally, if you're interested in my comic book artwork, check out the webcomic Slipstream, written by Jeffrey Taylor, co-host of the From Crisis to Crisis podcast and contributor to the Superman homepage website at clockworkcomics.co.uk, where you can also find EOS, Education of a Superhero, written and drawn by Clockwork Comics editor Adam DeChannel, who is also a contributor to the Superman homepage website. At Clockwork Comics, you can find a variety of webcomics and ebooks, as well as print editions of our webcomics, t-shirt iron-ons, glossy prints, or posters. Go to clockworkcomics.co.uk. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Superman Fan Podcast. Join me next week as together we'll crash through the time barrier to fly into the past and explore the Silver Age adventures of Superman. And don't forget to wear your red indestructible cape. As always, thanks to Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, creators of Superman.